Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
This is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, sitting in for Carrie Miller. In a Star Tribune investigation, Justice Denied, a team of reporters uncovered a story of terrible negligence. They reviewed more than 1,000 sexual assault cases filed in 2015 and 2016, and their investigation revealed that Minnesota's largest law enforcement agencies, including Minneapolis and St. Paul, have consistently failed to investigate the reported rape or did a poor investigation into the sexual assaults. The Star Tribune's reporting has sparked a response. The chairman of Minnesota's Police Licensing Board has pledged to adopt a model policy for sex assault investigations. A Republican lawmaker is calling for hearings. Candidates for office are calling for reform. So what's going on? What can be done? And what should be done? I have three guests in the studio this morning to answer these questions. Abby Hunnell is a rape survivor and an advocate for people who have been a victim of sexual assault. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Paul Schnell is police chief for Inver Grove and a former sex crimes investigator in St. Paul. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And Brandon Stahl is one of the reporters behind the Star Tribune series, Justice Denied. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to hear from you. So, have you ever reported rape or sexual assault to law enforcement? If so, what was that experience like? What was your experience with law enforcement? You can call in at 651-227-6000, toll-free 800-242-2828. And Abby, I'd like to start with you. You were a 19-year-old junior at the University of Minnesota when you were assaulted. What was your experience with law enforcement?
Well, straight off the bat, I felt really disrespected by law enforcement. I had been intoxicated at the time of my assault, and I felt that that was shaping the response of the officers towards me. They told me, for example, that I shouldn't call my mom because this was pretty embarrassing for me, is what they said. And then the detective I had had told me, you know, this. He said, this sounds like a he said, she said, it's not going to go anywhere. And they did change their perspective when they found out that I had many, many injuries on my body. But unfortunately, they did end up dropping the case anyways in Minneapolis due to some interference from fraternity brothers of the man who attacked me.
So, I mean, it was a long journey, but I mean, what did it take to get the rapist convicted?
Eventually, we gained further evidence through a Title IX investigation at my school. And then I found a free lawyer who was willing to help me named Amy Eisenor. And she reached out to the University of Minnesota Police Department instead of Minneapolis to see if they would be able to get jurisdiction of the case. A Minneapolis sex crimes investigator had basically told me that if I ever tried to get my case reopened, that he would charge me with false reporting. Which was pretty scary.
That was scary. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty intimidating. So I didn't want to go down that road again.
So, Paul, is there a difference between having, a city department handle a case or a campus, even if it's reporting on campus?
It shouldn't make any difference. They're all police officers, and they all should be trained in the investigation of these cases.
So what is some, you know, someone listening to this? And they just heard this story that, you know, look, we're going to charge you if you want to reopen this case. I mean, how is someone supposed to deal with this?
Well, I think one of the things I want to just say is that, first of all, I mean, when I read the stories from the newspaper accounts, certainly I've been a sex crimes investigator. And just Abby's own experience, I feel horrible that these things are happening. I also think that when you look at this from an investigative standpoint, one of the things that we need to do a better job of when I'm talking about law enforcement and training in law enforcement is we train people, our officers, to investigate crimes no matter what it is, whether it's a theft, a burglary, an assault. It doesn't matter. But when we think about the dynamics of a sex crime, highly personal crime, oftentimes a whole lot of other kind of things begin to filter in. Some people call them red flags. And those things are really dangerous and things that I think we need to begin to work on so that we don't, so people don't have the experiences that Abby had. And I think law enforcement needs to use this time to take a really good hard look at how it is we're responding to these cases.
Why don't we do it? It's partly a letter that came. It's from the letter that came to Star Tribune and just sort of captured, I think, a reaction many people had. The writer said, given the number of examples, it seems more likely that some of these agencies continue to operate according to past precepts. Why didn't she fight? What was she wearing? Why did she go to his room? Was she drinking? And, you know, that, you know, and these comments imply this is not worth investigating.
Absolutely. And we know that the beliefs around false reporting in sex crimes cases are extremely high among police, as well as the population generally. And yet, when you look at the really hard, good research data, it's somewhere less than 8%. And oftentimes, you may have law enforcement and others who work in the fields thinking that false reporting is as high as 60, 90%. Well, that's a big difference. And to what extent does that actually influence the investigations themselves?
Brandon, terrific series. Congratulations. This is making a difference. But some of your statistics, you're looking at teams. In about one-third of cases, investigator never interviewed the victim. About half the cases, police failed to interview potential witnesses. Most of the cases, 75%, including violent rapes by strangers, never forward to prosecutors for criminal charges. I mean, these are really chilling numbers. These are chilling statistics. And behind every statistic is a story of tragedy. So what has been the response by law enforcement?
Almost radio silence is a response from law enforcement. We really haven't heard much of anything at all from law enforcement, other than Paul Schnell here.
Right, who's sitting right next to you.
Right.
But other than that, and it was striking because the one thing that I read was sort of some bland bureaucratic response, we need to do a better job or something like that. But that has been, the radio silence is striking.
Yeah, I guess what I worry about is that law enforcement is hoping generally that this blows over, that they don't feel that there's really a problem here, that the Star Tribune got it wrong. You know, when we were doing the reporting on this, we had spoken with the head of the sex crimes department for St. Paul Police, and he had told us that he had reviewed all of the cases that they forwarded on to us for review. And I asked him, so, you know, you reviewed the cases. Does that mean that you saw any cases where you thought you could do better or something differently, improve? And he said no. And he, you know, he added, well, you know, we could have written a report here and there better. Instead of 5 or 6 lines, it could be 7 or 8. But generally, his thought was that they were doing okay.
Hmm. So, Abby, as you have discussed your experience, as you're out there talking to people, what are people saying to you? Do they come up to you afterwards and relay their experience or their insight? What are they saying to you?
Yeah, I mean, I hear from other victims of sexual assault constantly. And from the ones who do report, which is certainly not the majority, most of them have pretty bad experiences with law enforcement. Being sexually assaulted is already really terrible and traumatic, and that trauma gets kind of compounded when law enforcement responds in a negative way. I feel like I can count on one hand the number of people I know in Minnesota who have reported a sexual assault and have just been really satisfied, felt that law enforcement did a good job. It's just not very common from what I'm hearing.
So what would you like to see done?
Well, I do think that there needs to be more overview of the way that police reports are written and the way that cases are investigated. I think that each department should be reviewing their cases regularly and looking and saying, you know, how can we get better? Checking in with victims, I think, is a big part. Even in cases that, you know, seem to be investigated kind of well, oftentimes communication with the victim completely falls off. Sexual assault has a really high dropout rate. Victims choose to withdraw from investigations pretty frequently. And one reason for that is that they feel so much stress waiting and waiting and waiting to hear updates that eventually it just becomes too much. There needs to be more support for victims.
You know, Paula, when I was reading the series, my reaction was a lot of people should be fired. Just fired tomorrow. Just go. Be gone. If you don't want to investigate, you don't want to do your job. Anyone going to lose their job over this?
Well, I don't know that what the outcomes of this will be. I think, obviously, you know, this requires some rather significant systemic change. I think Brandon talked about this kind of this notion of the silence of law enforcement. While that has been the case, certainly I would agree that there hasn't been much publicly stated. I would say that, you know, behind the scenes, there has been meetings and discussions around how do we do this and do this in a way that isn't just kind of chatter, that isn't just talk. How do we do this and what's the comprehensive nature of the fix? At the same time, we feel a sense, there is a sense of urgency because at the same time that we're having these discussions, there are real victims being really impacted by these cases, which need to get addressed.
And Brandon, have you had any communication or any prosecutors reach out? Because a lot has been on the investigation. But in Abby's case, for example, it seemed like the prosecutor was, you know, very reluctant to bring the case until he kept saying, well, you need to bring me more information, bring me more information. So when we're talking about law enforcement, we also want to include the prosecutors in this. Any insight to the prosecutor side?
There have been a couple prosecutors who have reached out to me and expressed concern, who have said that clearly what we're showing needs to be changed. The challenge with the prosecutorial side is that we're writing about a lot of cases that they've just never seen. You know, if only one out of four cases is going to a prosecutor, prosecutors are saying, well, I can only comment on the cases that are in front of me. And a lot of those cases are generally somewhat at least better investigated.
Okay. So let's just take a brief break, and we're going to go get an update on the news with Mr. Stephen Johns.
Thanks. A new news conference by Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman to announce a charging decision in the fatal shooting of a black man by Minneapolis police has ended in disarray. Freeman was shouted down by community members this morning as he prepared to detail his decision in the death of 31-year-old Thurman Blevins. Body camera video released last night showed Blevins fleeing from police while apparently holding a gun. He was shot after a brief foot chase. An explosive wildfire in Redding, California has destroyed more than 650 houses. Tens of thousands of people in the small lake town in Northern California were ordered to evacuate, but authorities say one homeowner who stayed behind flagged down police after noticing that someone had been in his home. Two people have been arrested on suspicion of looting evacuated homes. Norwegian authorities are defending the actions of guards from a German cruise ship that killed a polar bear that had attacked and injured a crew member, saying they at first tried to scare it away. A police spokesman said today that two members of the 12-man crew that set foot on the most northern island of the Svalbard archipelago ahead of tourists on Saturday first tried to ward off the bear by shouting and making loud noises as well as firing a signal pistol, but to no effect. The incident sparked international outrage, with animal rights activists saying that it was wrong to begin with to let tourists from the MS Bremen cruise ship encroach upon territory known to be a habitat for the vulnerable species. Another slump in technology stocks is pulling major U.S. indexes lower, offsetting gains in energy companies. Twitter fell another 6% in midday trading following a 20% nosedive on Friday after the company reported a decline in monthly users. The Dow was down about 75 points. The forecast, partly cloudy, isolated thunderstorms in southern Minnesota today, mid-70s to mid-80s. The expected high temperature range, 79 in the Twin Cities at 11:31. On the next NPR News Presents, you'll hear an Aspen Ideas Festival talk about happiness. Behavioral economist Arthur Brooks ties the arts and philosophy to social science research on happiness. That's coming up Monday at noon and 9 p.m.
Programming is supported by the 2018 Ignite, Sparking Action in Marketing Conference. The theme? Protecting trust in today's consumer journey. Sponsored by YA and held September 20th at the U of M's Carlson School of Management.
If you're just joining us, I'm Chris Farrell, and this is NPR News. Our topic is on the systemic failure in Minnesota to investigate reported rape or to poorly investigate sexual assault. My guests are Abby Honnold, a rape survivor and advocate for those who have been a victim of sexual assault. Paul Schnell is police chief for Infra Grove and a former sex crime investigator in St. Paul. Brandon Stahl is with the Star Tribune. He worked on the series Justice Denied. So, Brandon, as you're working on the series, so how much of this, what did you sort of come away with what needs to be done?
It's a tough question for a journalist to answer.
Right. But you talked to so many people.
I guess I'll answer it this way. You know, we've heard a lot about, you know, there needs to be more training and resources for officers. And I think clearly from what we've heard from law enforcement departments, that's true. But I also think there needs to perhaps be a change of mindset. You know, a lot of the cases where we reviewed or that we victims that we spoke with, it wasn't about lack of resource. It was simply about the way they were treated. You know, victims who felt that they were blamed had nothing to do with, you know, resources or training. I think it just has to do with an officer whose mindset is not in line with how, you know, the victim's trauma at that moment.
And when you were interviewing the various victims, was that a consistent story, how they were treated?
Yes.
How they were dismissed, how they were felt, somehow it's my fault.
We heard that over and over again. It was a clear pattern that they felt if they reported one, the initial responding officer, they felt blamed. If they went to an investigator, again, it's another part where they felt blamed for the assault.
And are you?
And they didn't feel like they were believed.
Now that the series is out, and I realize it's an ongoing series, are more people reaching out to you?
Yes. Yes, and we are again hearing a lot of the same remarks about how they were treated by law enforcement. And I should say that this also extends to prosecutors as well, that they felt that like they were mistreated by prosecutors too.
So, Paul, one of the things, are there, you know, when you look online, their Justice Department, 2016, Baltimore, California, you go around the country, not to minimize what the Star Tribune has done, but these stories are showing up everywhere. So really, what can be done? I mean, this is systemic and not just in Minnesota, but it's systemic around the country.
Right. I mean, I think, and again, I don't want to minimize any of the responsibility that law enforcement bears for the response to these cases. At the same time, I think we do have to look at the broader cultural and social context, you know, the rape culture kinds of dynamics that are at play, the burdens we place on particularly women when it comes to these crimes, I think is a wholesale problem. At the same time, there are things I think that we can do in law enforcement. We can establish really clear protocols. We can do a better job of interviewing victims. We can start by believing victims as we do in any other crime. If you're burglarized, you know, we aren't investigating the extent out of the chute whether or not you're telling the truth about your burglary. All that stuff is based upon what the evidence leads us to, not what we think, not what you did, but what the evidence leads us to. And I think that's one of the key things that we need to really focus on with regard to these cases.
Now, this is nationwide. I don't know about in particularly here, but one of the themes that I was picking up is the need for more women investigators. And over the past 20 years, actually, that has not been growing at all. In fact, I think there's actually a slight decline, at least nationwide. And that this is something, obviously, that takes a longer period of time. But if you're going to bring about change, it's changing at least some of your investigators.
Without a doubt. I mean, women make a difference. Although, when you look at some of the data, again, this may speak to the cultural dynamic at play, but oftentimes the outcomes don't look fundamentally different when the investigator's a woman.
Brandon, you're shaking your head.
Well, I mean, some of the cases that we saw that had the absolute worst outcomes where victims told us they were treated absolutely poorly, they were handled by women, police who were either the female police officers who were the responding officers or the investigators. So I'm not absolutely sure that's an answer.
Interesting. And why do you think that is? Did it come out in your reporting?
I guess I have theories and opinions, but at this point I don't know.
You don't know. Yeah.
I don't know if Abby might have a thought on that, because I'm sure she's heard the same thing.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if we're looking at like victim blaming, it's certainly not limited to male officers or men in general. I've gotten plenty of that in my own experience from women, sometimes more harshly so, saying, you know, well, this hasn't happened to me, so you must have done something wrong for it to happen to you, is sometimes the attitude that I've gotten. But I think across the board, I mean, the issue is, I agree, it is much wider than just you know, one tweak will fix this. You know, it's so many things that we have to change. And I do think that having more female investigators, more people of color in that position would really help, especially with just victim level of comfort. I remember asking for a female officer because I just didn't feel comfortable being around men at the time. But I still think that there are plenty of, you know, investigators who can do a lot of harm to victims who are female. So that's not, you know, kind of a one-stop solution.
And did you deal with a female officer or?
I didn't. I requested a female officer. I requested an advocate. I requested a lawyer. And all of those requests were denied.
And then how did you hook up with the lawyer who really helped you pursue your rapist?
Yeah, I ended up reaching out to an advocacy agency, the Aurora Center at the University of Minnesota, and they had connections to legal resources for victims. One great place for victims in Minnesota to call is Standpoint. It's a nonprofit run by attorneys who can give legal advice and occasionally take on cases. That's not where my lawyer was from, but it was incredibly helpful to have someone on my side because there was clearly nothing I could do on my own. As much as I wanted to push, I couldn't fix it without some help.
And Paul, are there best practices in terms of training? And because you're part of a group around the state, is it just the state or is it broader than the state, but sharing information?
Right. Right now, we are working collectively with partners really across the spectrum, prosecution, advocacy, sheriffs, police chiefs, to address some of these. And there are a number of best practices that I think are being explored, looked at, and I think between the Post Board as well as like the associations, to what extent can those things be implemented? But I think in addition to that, the feeling is that there needs to be not just implementation of those things from a training standpoint, but there has to be some accountability that they get used and assurances that they get used. And then I think secondly, there has to be a vehicle for people who don't get what they think they deserve as a result of their case, a mechanism for them to be able to bring forward their concerns and have that looked into.
And Abby, we got a message in here, questions directed toward you. Does victim blaming have something to do with the way our society views masculinity and femininity? What does Abby think?
I think that's definitely part of it, especially with assaults that are a male perpetrator and a female victim. I think that attitude also really harms male victims in particular. I've spoken to a lot of male victims of sexual assault, and almost none of them have ever reported it because they feel that they are more at fault due to being a man, that they, you know, should have fought back, that they should have, you know, been stronger. And I think that that's a really unfair burden that we put onto people. I think a lot of rape culture, though, it comes from fear. People don't want to believe that this kind of stuff happens. And in order to feel safer, they kind of construct a world in which it must be your fault if this happens to you, because it's terrifying to realize that sexual assault can happen to anybody at any time. You know, it's not something that happens because you bring it on yourself. And I think people feel safer when they pretend that it is.
So if you have an insight, if you would like to join our conversation, you know, please give us a call and give us your insight. Give us what you think is going on. And the number is 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Now, one of these, Brandon, is as an ongoing series. Now, one of the things that I read, and it may have changed from what I read earlier, is that you made a much larger request for information and is based off what you were able to get. Are you able to now be getting more information, more data in order as part of this series?
So we requested just over 2,000 case files to analyze, and we've received about half of those files so far. We continue to get them in drips and drabs. Minneapolis just provided another batch to us this morning. But there are some departments out in the state where we haven't received anything.
And you're just staying in touch with them and just keep how about today?
Yeah, we just keep telling them we would like the data in the records as soon as we can get them, and hope that they provide them as soon as possible.
And what do people who are not handing over their data, what do they say?
There's kind of a disconnect. You know, the records that we're getting are mostly from the records technicians at these departments. We're not calling up the police chief and saying, hey,
right,
because the police chief, he's not going to be the one who's going to provide all these records. It's going to be the technicians behind the scenes. And they're just saying they're doing the best they can do. They're very short-staffed. There's often one person. They've got me and gosh knows how many other people requesting records. So they will get to it when they get to it.
So I think there's a question both for Paul and for Abby, and it's from Jill in Fridley. And she says, when I hear people I know victim blaming, how can I talk to them and get them to think about this in a different way? And you're drawing on different experiences, but you probably have both dealt with that situation. Paul?
I mean, I think we need to call into account, ask people what informs that. You know, and we see this with everything. But obviously sexual assault began because of the nature of the personal nature of the offense. That type of victim blaming can really cause a chilling effect on victims coming forward. And that's not in the best interest of the victims, certainly, and certainly not in the best interest of public safety.
Abby?
I think that one thing that is useful for me sometimes when I talk to people, you know, people like to critique victims and what they could have done to change things. In my own experience, people keep saying, well, if you just hadn't believed him, if you hadn't, you know, walked across the street, if you had just run as soon as you felt uncomfortable. But then I usually try asking people, how many times have you been in a situation that has been kind of uncomfortable or that you've done something that was maybe a little unsafe and nothing happened to you? You know,
right.
We all do
We've
things all the
yes.
time that are, you know, technically unsafe, you know, and I think for victims, especially if you develop post-traumatic stress disorder, that becomes something that's on your mind all the time. You know, every single time I'm walking alone, every single time I go into my apartment by myself, it's something that I think about. But the average person doesn't think about it, and they shouldn't have to think about it, you know? We shouldn't have to be constantly protecting ourselves against a possible threat. And most assailants are people that we know and trust. You know, I think around 70%, I'm not completely sure on the number, of assaults are committed by an acquaintance, family member.
It's a high percentage, whatever the
yeah,
the actual
you know, and
is.
You can't constantly be on edge protecting yourself from people in your life all the time. That's no way to live. And so, trying to point out to people that you know, constantly living on edge, being hypervigilant, doesn't help anybody. And we shouldn't have to live that way. You know, the problem is not with the victims.
Let's go to the phones, and I believe we have Bill from Roseville.
Yeah, hi. I just had a little bit of a pushback on your police officer there when he said the average cop can investigate these cases. There's no way you can just pull patrolmen off the street and expect them to know how to do this. This is complicated investigations, and most of the police departments don't know how to do it. And a classic example is look around the country at all the universities and how poorly these rape cases have been investigated or non-investigated. Most of them they just drop them.
So do you have experience in these investigations, or this is just an observation that you've made? Or
no, it's just a lot. It's just, you know, just generally paying attention to what's going on around the country.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we have an epidemic. I'm sure Abby would agree with this. There's an epidemic of assaults on college campuses all over the country. And I've read many experts that say that the problem is you bring in university police or even the regular police departments. They're not trained in how to do it. They don't know how to investigate these cases, so they just kind of walk away. You know?
So thank you. And Paul, you're nodding. So
we are in full agreement.
I mean, yeah, I was just going to say.
Yeah,
so,
we're in full agreement that these cases require a special type of investigator, or at least investigative focus.
And then So talk a little bit more about the training of the police, though. I mean, because that he's really raising that question. You're not going to turn to someone who's walking the beat and say, hey, you're going to start doing these investigations. That's an exaggeration. But tell us a little bit about the training.
Well, I think one of the things that we've been really – there's been a lot of focus on. I think this is coming – you know, has been really emerged is this – focus on trauma and making sure that our officers are responding to victims in a way that recognizes the trauma of the experience of sexual assault and what that means from the standpoint of evidence collection, what that means from the standpoint of the victim feeling and experiencing, you know, a better sense of feeling heard. Those are some of the things that I think are happening. And as well, I think engagement with advocacy has been one of the things that we know is critically important. As Abby pointed out, communication time is oftentimes a key issue. And when there is a direct kind of involvement of advocacy, it can really kind of create a nice connection because the investigators may be working with a variety of different cases, and that advocate can be one of the key vehicles for communication. Or even clarification of what might be happening or those sorts of things.
So let's go to Lisa in St. Paul. Lisa? Are you there, Lisa? Nope. Lisa's not there. But I do want to I want to read her question because obviously we just lost her, but read her question. And she said, and I think that she says one of the main problems is there's a lack of supervisors who allow this to go on to avoid investigating. They look for excuses to put this on the back burner, which I think really is what you've been saying.
Well, I think what happens is that, you know, if we don't know, this sounds overly simplistic, but if we don't know what good looks like and we are not clear about what the standard expectations are for the investigations of these particular types of cases, I think what can happen is there isn't the level of scrutiny, there isn't the level of accountability in terms of what happened with the case. And you can see that when you look, and I'm sure Brandon's experience with this has been, you know, you see one investigator in a unit who has a lot of activity related to their cases, and then you can look at another investigator who has very little. And what accounts for that difference? And this is one of the quality control and consistency things that I think if there was a higher level of supervision and accountability, some of those things may get addressed.
So, Abby, you've been talking to a lot of people. You've been out there. So what do you feel that your discussion and other discussions, the Star Tribune series, is this starting to make a difference?
You know, I would hope so. There actually was a piece by a blogger here at NPR, Bob Collins, that said, you know, this shouldn't surprise us, you know, which is true. But I think that the more we keep pressure up and keep reminding people that, you know, this is happening all the time, you know, because I think that's one of the issues I've run into. You know, when I came forward, there were some people who looked at me as like the rape victim, like you are the
right
person that this has happened to. And having to remind people, no, this is happening to people every single day across the country and in your own state and in your own backyard, you know, and just because you don't hear about it doesn't mean it's not happening. And so I really commend everyone who participated with this story because it takes a lot of courage and kind of ignoring sometimes even what's maybe best for yourself to talk about this and talk about the failures that are happening and talk about trauma. And unfortunately, that it seems to be, you know, that's what we are needing to, you know, kind of get people's attention. And I really hope that people can continue paying attention from this series and kind of sustain that energy to make some change happen.
And Brandon, as you were reporting the series, I mean, were you surprised at the direction that it took? Is this what you expected to see? Because, you know, we always have a lot of questions when you start reporting out a big series like this, and then you gradually realize what is that story.
I was astonished at how pervasive the problems were across the state. We started out looking at the Minneapolis Police Department, saw some patterns emerge, and thought, well, why not take a look at St. Paul, saw the same patterns, looked at other agencies across the state. And it was really remarkable to see that, to see that so many departments have these problems of not investigating cases or talking with witnesses or suspects or victims and just not thoroughly handling these cases as they should be.
And so I want to go back to the phones, and we're getting short on time, but Barbara, I just wanted to get your insight. And you're in Elk River.
Yes. I was a criminal defense attorney before I retired, and I've seen thorough investigations in criminal sexual conduct cases against children, so I know that the police know how to do this. I was disturbed by the article in the Star Tribune because it referred to police officers who didn't interview eyewitnesses, who didn't collect forensic evidence,
right.
who didn't
yeah.
do the simple things that police officers, whether they're specially trained or not, should be doing in every case. So I don't want to see this all blamed on lack of training. More training might be good, but what we have is a police culture that does not respect women and women's victims. And that's my only comment. Thank you.
Well, that's a powerful comment, and I'm glad you brought it. And Paul, you are here representing the police, and I think you've gotten a consistent message. But in the short time that's remaining, that was one of the most stunning things: is investigators not even talking to witnesses.
It is stunning. We have to do better. We owe it to people. And I think that's just as plain as I can put it. We have to do better. And I'm confident that because of the art of the reporting, it brings this under the full glare of public scrutiny. And I think we will rise to that challenge.
And we can expect more out of this series?
Yes, there are several more stories coming through the end of the year.
And are they all dealing with sexual assault and rape? It's justice denied. So just this is the focus.
The focus is looking at how police and prosecutors respond to sex assault reports. So, yes.
Yes. And Abby, I think you get the last voice here. What do you want to leave our listeners, the people who are listening to this discussion? What thought do you want to leave with them?
I guess one final thought would just be that even if people in your life might not tell you, that you know victims of sexual assault, you know perpetrators of sexual assault. There are a lot of things that are happening every day that harm the people in your life, whether they've told you or not, you know. And so I think it's really important for people to keep a sustained focus on this issue and to remember that this is far more pervasive than most people think.
I'd like to thank all of you for taking your time and being here. Abby Honnold is an advocate for victims of sexual assault. Paul Schnell is police chief for Invergrove and a former sex crime investigator in St. Paul. Brandon Stahl is a reporter with the Star Tribune. He is part of the team that has worked on the Star Tribune series, Justice Denied.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.